we have enough content in the world. You know, if we don't need more content, we need more interesting content and more quality content.
Welcome to B2B Content Strategist, where we bring you insights and practical tips straight from the minds of top B2B content marketing experts. I'm Amy Woods, founder and CEO of Content 10X, and in each episode, I chat with leading B2B marketers about how they consistently craft and execute successful campaigns, even when faced with tight deadlines and limited resources. If you're looking to elevate and optimize your content marketing efforts, you're in the right place. Keep listening. Hello and welcome to the B2B Content Strategies podcast. I'm your host, Amy Woods, and today I'm joined by Amy Higgins, who is Director of Content Strategy at Cloudflare. Amy is an award-winning marketing leader, highly regarded for extensive experience building and developing top integrated marketing teams, including content, campaign, SEO, customer, community, influencer, and social. She's recognized as a natural leader with expertise in storytelling, strategic planning, and data-driven insights. Amy defines and executes marketing strategies that attract, engage, activate, and retain new audiences. In this episode, we chat about how Amy transitioned Cloudflare's content team from a reactive ticket-based content as a service model to a strategic pod-based structure, where each pod serves as a mini marketing team to different parts of the business. We also discuss Cloudflare's content and campaign strategy, including why their thought leadership blog, The Net, is award-winning. We chat about Amy's philosophy on what to outsource or keep in-house, and why she loves proprietary data like surveys and reports. And we also get to hear a highly amusing story about when too many people got involved in a review and it became content by committee. This was a fantastic conversation. I really, really enjoyed the conversation with Amy, and I'm so pleased to be able to share it with you. Let's jump in. Amy, welcome to B2B Content Strategist. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Firstly, congratulations on having such a great name. Fellow Amy, this is good. This is the first episode where I've interviewed another Amy, so that's nice. But yeah, it's so great to have you here, and I'm really, really looking forward to this conversation. To kick things off, would you mind just telling us a little bit about your role? And also, I think everyone knows mostly who listens to this show about Cloudflare being such a big organization and what you do. But for anyone who doesn't, also just a few sentences about what Cloudflare does as well.
Yeah, of course. So I run the content and video team over at Cloudflare. So we do everything like podcast, this, and all of the demand gen content and the thought leadership content. Cloudflare is a security company. We're actually just about to celebrate our 15 years. So 15 amazing years, which is hard to believe, but we mostly do cybersecurity and app development. And then we have a whole developer stream as well.
And so for you in your role, what does that look like? What does your team look like? How is it split up in terms of the functions and responsibilities?
Yeah, it's funny. When I joined, the team was very much a shared service. So we were very much ticket takers, where we had the thought leadership blog would come to us and say, hey, write this. Or we would have the demand gen team come to us and say, write that. Or the event team come and say, I need help with this. And it didn't give us much ownership. So I switched the team around. And at the same time, we had a leader of demand gen join. And so Brooke and I sat down and like, how do we make this better? So we now have pods, essentially, where the pod structure has a demand gen leader, a content leader, people from PMMs, and people from customer advocacy. And so those teams operate like little tiny marketing teams. And so I've got one person on two of the pods, one person on one of the pods. And then I have, they can go deep in the content and deep in the thought process of it, but also go broad in what they create around it. And then I also have someone who does primarily just thought leadership. So we do all the editorial on our thought leadership blog, award-winning blog. And then I have a person who does more of our website content and Learning Center content. And then I have two people who operate our Cloudflare TV, which is our streaming video service and podcasting. And then I have a project manager.
Lots of people. In terms of the pods then, it's really interesting that you said about that. And as a someone who runs an agency, pods are quite popular in the agency world as well, where there's different pods that serve a collection of clients and things like that. Is that how you guys work in terms of, does each pod serve a different part of the business, so to speak? Yeah.
Yeah. So we have, if you think about our solutions, we really have four different sections. We've got security, applications, networking, and then also developer. And so Elaine on my team, she sits on the security and networking because they cross over really well. And then Ashley sits on applications, and then developers we're still working on. So yeah, they can go deep into that subject and it works really well.
Yeah, that's great. And you mentioned award-winning blog, and I know that's been, you've been recently winning awards, haven't you? Share a little bit about that. I'd just love to know about that and the blog.
Content Marketing Institute, they've been around probably 15 years as well. And they started doing content marketing awards. I've been a judge for 11 years now on their awards, and they have grown. I have reviewed people who are lifestyle blogs. And then I've reviewed people like SAP. And then I've also reviewed people like an agency who's supporting a large company. And it used to be maybe like four or five awards. And now I think it's like 40 awards. And so one of the awards, we submitted the NET. So the NET is our thought leadership blog. We say for the C-suite, by the C-suite. And so all of our authors on there are part of our C-suite. And then we also have customers who are the C-suite at their company who are blog authors. So we submitted the blog for best B2B publication and won it with CMI. Last year, I won the Community Champion Award at Content Marketing. And I got brought up to the stage, which like I blushed and could barely walk. So it was a total surprise. And my award just came in, I think, last week. So almost
really?
A year. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Oh, it's great to be recognized and winning these awards, especially from such a great institution as well. So that's fantastic. Oh, it was great to hear about how your team is structured and the pod way that you've arranged those is really interesting as well. I always love to ask, what do you like to always try and keep as in-house in the marketing teams? And is there anything or any particular area or skill set that you have a tendency to feel is best or outside outsourced, whether it's agency or freelancer? So what are your views on that, the kind of the mix and where you deploy that mix?
I have switched that mix up at every single company I've been at. I think it really depends on the company, but I would say the further down the funnel you get and the more product focused you get, the better it is to have it in-house. There's also things that happen like launching a new product or a new feature, like Cloudflare just launched PaperCrawl. I couldn't have an agency write about PaperCrawl because every single day, even minute, things were being updated, things were changing, and that gets expensive if you use an agency to do that. It's easier to have that flexibility in-house. I've done agencies where they do the big stuff and then in-house breaks it apart. I've done it the other way where we do the little stuff and the agencies build the big stuff. I think it's the more product focused or the more secretive as you launch new products, then that's better to have in-house.
Yeah. And you mentioned about when you first joined and it was a lot like content as a service, so to speak. And that was something that you addressed and you've talked us through a little bit about how you addressed that with the changing of the team and the structure. What was that experience like in terms of that setting up that program management of content as a service model to be in a more strategic and integrated role within the organization?
Yeah. And I would say we're not completely where I want it to be yet. It's been a year. So it's a journey, definitely. A journey more than a process. Every team's different. So I did the same thing when I was at Twilio. The first step is to really talk to the teams, and understand not only your team, but the teams you support, what's working and what's not working. And then understanding on your team where the skill sets are, or what do they enjoy? What do they wake up in the morning and really want to do? What do they hate doing? I always ask a question in interviews, what's something you do really well, but you hate doing? And I give the example of like, my mother hates emptying the dishwasher. I actually don't enjoy project management, but I do it really well. So understanding that from your team helps develop the pods. The other thing that I had no idea with was how much content we were actually creating and who it came from. Because the request would come in chat, on email, on a call, there was no tracking. So immediately I put everything into a tracking system. So unfortunately it was a huge spreadsheet. And then we started using the only project management tool we had at the time was Jira, and an outdated, a very outdated form of Jira. So the first 3 months it was all in Jira. By the first 6 months, we could actually report. And so I could report back and saying, hey, my team is producing this amount of content and we're actually overworked because we're over capacity. And then here are the things that are duplicative, because that was the other part. Having all those tickets, we might get one ticket from one person on one side of the company and a completely separate ticket from another person on the other side of the company, and the topics are the same. And so there's all this duplication of effort that we had to go through.
So what system have you moved on from Jira now to another PM tool?
Yeah, we are in Asana, which is temporary, unfortunately. There's talks about changing the system, so who knows? Cloudflare is a big company that acts like a startup, so I'll use Asana as long as I can have it.
Yeah, we use ClickUp, but quite a few of our clients use Asana, so we do sit within their Asana system as well. But they're very ClickUp and Asana are much of a muchness, aren't they, in Basecamp as well. But like what you explained in the like the reporting and the knowing how much time is being deployed against different things and spotting that duplication, I love all that, because I think in my heart I really am an ops person. Like I hear that, I'm like, oh, it's like a classic ops management situation, isn't it? And so I really like hearing that, but it's definitely not easy, and it takes time. So yeah, especially when you're serving lots of different areas, so it's an interesting challenge to have.
We do a lot of content. Last quarter alone, 180 pieces.
Wow, a quarter.
Yeah, a quarter.
Wow. Does that include social, or is that long? Is that mainly long form? You're not even including social posts within that?
Not even included social.
No?
Yeah.
Wow,
we do,
okay. Yeah.
All of our assets will have promo bombs with them. So if it's gated, a landing page. If it's ungated, all the social. And so we create all of that, and then we send it to other teams who are ticket takers who will publish them and post them.
Wow. That's a lot. But I'm not surprised, because obviously having looked at this, your website and your content and snooping around, looking at everything, it certainly gave the impression of there's a lot of content being created and lots of really high value, really high quality content as well. So it's amazing that there's that volume and the quality too. So you obviously got a great team and doing a great job over there. Could you tell me, I love this question, either from your current experiences at Cloudflare or just across your career really, what's the most memorable B2B marketing campaign that you've run or been involved in, and what made it so memorable? What were the measures of success? And I don't mean the most successful necessarily either, but just one that you always come back to and remember.
Yeah, there's so many. Because you have expectations in your plan, and then when the expectations don't happen, I think that's where the lessons really are and where the growth is. It's probably been 10 to 12 years, which is scary to think about. It's so long ago. I was working at Concur, and I was working for the small business team. And the small business marketing team, I think we were like 10 to 12 people. I had two people underneath me, and I reported to the lead of demand gen. And we launched a vertical marketing campaign, which is now like a must-have. Then it was still people were figuring it out. And so we hired an agency to do all the audience research on all the different verticals. And we made this huge playbook that was really neat and special and online. And you could sort through it and see, if I want to talk about expense management to this type of company, what sort of language do I use? And so we had all this information. And we made nurture campaigns to help the different verticals. And we had lofty goals of doing like 5 verticals a quarter. We ended up doing 1 to 2 a quarter because it took so much work.
Yeah.
So we made these nurture campaigns and our MQLs, our marketing qualified leads, shot through the roof, like 200 times above
goal. Really? Oh, yeah. Wow.
But our sales qualified leads like barely tipped the needle. And I was like, what's going on here? So we took a step back and we went and we interviewed all the sales team. I sat on calls with them. I looked at our win-loss reports. And it turned out that not only had they not been using our huge fancy playbook,
wow,
but the huge fancy playbook was too fancy and too huge for them to use. So if they knew about it, they would log in and be like, nah, I can't deal with this. I'll just use my normal thing. And so we had to skim down all that work. And what's funny is if we had known that from the beginning, that was probably in the 6-7 figures that we spent on that project, we would have saved so much money. We ended up making like a spreadsheet and then they could follow that. Once we did that and then ran sales trainings, so we did sales trainings in all the different verticals, then the SQL started to match the MQL.
Yeah, it's funny. It's come up quite a lot on this season of the podcast, talking about cross-functional alignment and issues like this as well. And we actually have a call tomorrow with a client of ours, head of sales, because he had a similar issue where he was feeling like the marketing work was fantastic, but why aren't the sales team converting? And through various discussions, it's quite similar, actually. They're being given content that they're not really using and trying to work out, let's work together then, what would you use and what's going to work? And it's a well-trodden path, but at least you got there and you did the investigation. You were looking at the numbers, weren't you? And you got there in the end and then came with a solution. But it's a great one to learn from, isn't it? Because I'm sure I understand why that's memorable, because you're never going to forget that, are you? And you're going to have taken some big learnings from that. No, I love that. That's great. Are there any other, like, any different, I don't know, funny marketing mishaps, like any cautionary tales of marketing gone wrong that you've experienced through your career?
I have a couple, but I'll share one. So it was during the pandemic and I was working at Salesforce, and Salesforce, definitely internally, maybe externally too, we would call ourselves an event company that, you know, masquerades as a software company.
Really?
Because Salesforce, I mean, think about Dreamforce. It is huge and they do event really well. So when the pandemic hit and we didn't have in-person events, we're like, that brings in most of our leads. What do we do? And so they started doing, every single month was a different cloud's like product launch. And sometimes the product launches, and I'm glad I don't work there anymore because I can say this, were kind of made up. Like, let's just put all of our emphasis this month on this one product. And so that included webinars and blogs and customer stories and like huge, just a lot of pressure. So I had a blog, and it was our launch blog for this product launch. It had over 20 VP and above reviewers in like 1,000 words. So it's,
oh, wow.
Content by committee, worst nightmare. And I launched it. Everybody was happy. We kind of negotiated to get where we needed to be. And my boss, who was the SVP of PMMs, he came to me after the first week and he's like, how's the blog doing? And I was like, it sucks. And he's just off the top of your head, what sucks? I'm like, yeah, it sucks. I'm not proud of it. Like, we had to make it agreeable to everybody, which means it was watered down. And he's like, can you pull up the data? And I pulled up the data and he was like, oh, it does suck. And he's like, change it. And I was like, actually, I want to wait. So we waited 30 days when it, you know, the died down of the interest. And in the back end, we went in with, we changed it and went back to like draft 2 out of 20. And within the first day of the new blog being launched, it quadrupled the amount of views that we had as a benchmark. And so when I told him that, he was like, what did you change? I was like, I took everybody's feedback out and I wrote it. It's based on what our writer needed it to say and addressing what our brief said and adding in some more emotional interest that had been stripped out by other people. And then we used it as a case study on why not to have content by committee.
Oh, wow. What a great story that is. The numbers didn't lie there either, did they? Yeah, that's crazy. Like you said, it's just going to get so watered down and lose any strong view of 20 people review. I mean, I can only imagine that you're just taking a word in and a word out and a word in, like, just, oh my goodness. Yeah. Oh, wow.
It got
what a
very detailed.
Story. Yeah. I can imagine.
So detailed,
yeah.
Of like above versus more. And I was like, really? We're going to nitpick a word? Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, leave the experts to do what they do best, which was the first few versions, though. Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's an amazing story.
Just a super quick break from this conversation to let you know that if you're a B2B technology or professional services company and you want help with streamlining your content operations, outsourcing your content repurposing is the number one way to produce more high-quality content and boost your ROI. Without putting any more pressure on your team. In fact, it could save your team up to 30 hours per week. We offer content repurposing services for video and audio content. Whether you have a show or you're launching a brand new one, maybe you have an archive of awesome content, be it webinars or a virtual event, or you want help creating thought leadership content that we can repurpose, we've got you covered. Head to content10x.com to see how we can help you and start increasing your efficiency and the value you get from your content. Now, back to the conversation.
So it wouldn't be a podcast with me in it, basically, if I didn't ask something about repurposing. So you guys, you create loads of content and you already mentioned things like podcasts and all that long form type content. Is there a type of content that is your favorite for repurposing and maximizing where you just think, yes, because with that, there's so much repurposing potential?
My favorite are third-party surveys. So I feel like I'm birthing a baby that I have been carrying for, by the time it launches, over a year. So Cloudflare, there's nuggets of goodness, but the nuggets of goodness have been siloed. And so I'm working on taking those nuggets of goodness and breaking down the silos and making it a center of excellence and then siloing it out. So we launched not a third-party survey, but a first-party data report called the Signals Report, Security Signals Report, that kind of morphed into a life of its own. And once it morphed into this big, heavy piece, my team, we took it apart and developed different things. So we have thought leadership articles. We have an entire series on our podcast and Cloudflare TV. And from that report alone, just with those two simple activations, our conversion rate from how many people can actually see a landing page to how many people actually fill out the form is normally like around 2%. This report in the first 3 months, it's close to 10%. And so I'm using that as a case study. Like, this is just like barely touching the surface. So we're doing these massive surveys. Right now I'm in the application modernization survey where we have interviewed using Qualtrics, so using a third party, interviewed over 2,000 VP and above security leaders. So CIOs, CTOs, CSOs, over half are probably in the C-suite from our respondents right now. And we're analyzing that data and then producing 200 pieces of content off of it. So there's the global report, the EMEA report, the APAC report, 23 country report, 5 different vertical reports, and each of those verticals are then localized to each of the regions. a whole thought leadership series on Cloudflare TV and the blog, a whole thought leadership gated asset, webinars, customer interviews, offsets on AI and offsets on AppSec, which is application security. So like huge project. And those are my favorite because you get something really meaty and interesting, which to me is data. And then you can pull the levers on that data for the different audiences and really get niche on what you're talking about.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I think today in the world of AI, just nothing beats that because it's proprietary so that you went out there and did all these surveys, you know, got that all that data that you pulled in, that's yours. And then your unique points of view and your insights and everything that comes from that. Again, the AI is not, you can't, it's a completely different world to what AI can produce because it's completely created by you. It's proprietary to you. It's your information. I really love that. Maybe at some point I'll be asking you if you'd mind coming over onto the Content 10X podcast, which is my podcast specifically about repurposing, because I'd love to actually just talk about that whole thing. So much to say. That's such an amazing example of what you can get from great data that can just fuel so much content. And that's an amazing answer. And I just mentioned it. So I just said the word AI. I feel on this season of the podcast this year, I've been really enjoying asking people about application of AI, because this is the third season. No, we didn't even have it in the agenda in the first season. Second season, people were still testing the water. And then this season, it's ranged from a bit more than testing the water to absolutely embedded into what the teams are doing every day. Where do you guys sit, like, when it comes to application usage of AI within the marketing team, and where is it being applied?
I will admit that I hate AI. Like, I am.
Do you?
I am the worst adopter. I like it for things like, I use it for travel. We spoke about travel before we started. Yeah, I'm like, these are the activities I want to do. Plan a travel route for me. Like, it's great for that. But it doesn't replace a person. So we started, actually before I joined Cloudflare, they were testing AI. And Ashley on my team, they did a wonderful job of it. We were looking at three different AI platforms that were specifically for content and narrowed it down to two because one of them didn't pass our security standards. Being a security company, and also 20% of the world's internet runs through Cloudflare. So if Cloudflare gets attacked, 20% of the internet gets attacked. So we're really, really particular on that. So we had two companies that we were looking at that passed our security, and they did a very detailed test. You know, let's look at landing pages. Let's look at social. Let's look at making distributive content. And none of them passed the test a year ago. And so we were just about to start the same test with three companies, because that third company that didn't pass now passed. And the company as a whole adopted Gemini. So now we're in the process of looking at Gemini and building the LLM library and building the prompt library to meet things. And so we've been able, I would say, Ashley, really, they've been able to replicate doing like a landing page. But it's still, our measure of success is, with content, can AI get us 20% there? Not 80% there, but can it get us 20% there and give us a good starting point? So we've been able to do that with landing pages. We can't do it with social or paid advertisement copy. It's just too boring. So we're testing it in stages. We're testing it on the derivative bombs, the bill of materials that come after for promos. We're testing it that first. Once we get that where we can get the agents to work appropriately, then next we're going to look at the derivative content. So like a great example would be the surveys that I'm doing. Here's the main survey. Break it out for the healthcare vertical. And here are the things the healthcare vertical cares about. I don't know if we'll get there by the time I need to launch this survey, but that's our next test. And if we can do that, I think really far off starting content from scratch. But I don't want, the problem with AI is if you start with crap, it spins out crap. So you want to make sure you start with something really good so that when it spins out derivative or even just ad copy, that it spins out at least something that starts good.
And I think that even sometimes if you start with great, it can, it obviously still spins out crap as well, doesn't it? Because I've been pulling my hair out and stopped using it for something where I was asking it to review some transcripts and help pick out some key themes of conversations. And it was just hallucinating. Like, it just made up these names of people that I'd never spoken to and told me all about the conversation. And when I actually put in, who is John Smith? What are you like? I don't know what you're talking about. It was like, yeah, I just made up John Smith in the conversation because I had trouble reading your transcript. So I just fabricated an entire conversation, told you what the key themes were of a conversation you never had. And then I'm just pulling your hair out. And in the end, I reverted to good old manual and like stopped using it, which actually leads on for every episode of B2B Content Strategist. Been doing something super fun where each guest asks the next guest a question. You don't know who it is, you just know that it's a fellow leader running a B2B content marketing team. So your question came from Kostas Sakadanis, Director of Marketing at Ultimate Group. So his question to you:
if they use AI, what part of marketing will be reluctant to use AI, apart from the data side, but I would like to just hear other areas of what they are not going to use AI for.
Thought leadership. Like, I think the two would be the research. AI can't do third-party research. No way. But thought leadership, because that's what's going to win in this crowded market. If you are watching or reading or listening to the same thing in different voices, it's still the same thing, just AI is pushing out the same thing for different people. And what's going to make you stand out is being original and being authentic and having the expertise that a computer cannot have. So I don't want AI to touch any of our thought leadership ever.
It's a complete oxymoron in itself, isn't it? Because thought leadership is, as you just said, it's independent and unique and perspective. And AI is always drawn on something that has been said before. It just regurgitates in different ways things that it finds exist. So it could never do thought leadership because it's never going to be able to pull anything unique that would by definition be thought leadership. It makes complete sense. It isn't. If AI is really, it doesn't go in that category, does it? But there are many teams that are spinning out thought leadership content and you can tell it's all AI and it doesn't work, does it? Yeah.
We have enough content in the world. If we don't need more content, we need more interesting content and more quality content.
Yeah, there's like 99 problems, but lower content is not one. Definitely not. So just turning that to you, what question would you like to ask our next guest on the show?
Oh, I would love to know the age-old question of brand over demand. What's more important? And I sit on the brand team. I sit on the corporate marketing team, which sometimes is called brand team. But I also support the demand gen team. So for us, we do both. And I think both are important. And I think you can't have one without the other. But some people look at one's more important than the other. So that's always interesting for me. Brand over demand.
Yeah, love that question. Yeah, that's great. You know, there's so much more I would have liked to have talked to you about today, but of course we ran out of time. Thank you so much. It's been really, really awesome speaking to you. So thanks so much. Is there any next step or anything that you would like the listeners to take from this episode?
I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. If they're interested, I would say definitely go look at Cloudflare's blog, The Net, that has all of our thought leadership content. And then Cloudflare TV has all of our executive perspective content. So both of them are really interesting, especially if you're in the security space.
They are, yeah. I was going down a bit of a rabbit hole just looking at them when I was like preparing to speak to you and when we reached out and everything too. It's great. It's just a great example of just excellent B2B content done at its best, I think, looking at the site. So we'll put links to all of that here. And of course, if you are listening to this now and you've really enjoyed the conversation, let Amy know on LinkedIn. Oh, and when we do posts and we tag you and things like that, Amy, please shout out and say that you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. I've really appreciated this conversation. It's been great.
Awesome. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of B2B Content Strategist. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Feel free to connect with me on social media. You can find me, Amy Woods, founder of Content 10X, on LinkedIn. If you get in touch, please do leave a message and let me know that you listen to B2B Content Strategist. You can also connect with Content 10X. We're on LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And for more insights on optimizing your content marketing and the power of repurposing, head over to content10x.com. You'll discover valuable resources to help you maximize the impact of your content. We have our sister podcast, the Content 10X Podcast, hundreds and hundreds of blog posts, and a library full of free resources and guides all about how to be a better content creator and content repurposer. If you're seeking consulting support or a trusted partner to handle your content creation, repurposing, and distribution, then also reach out to us. We offer a world-class, fully managed service that takes care of as much or as little as you need when you need it. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'll catch you in the next one.